Everybody else just calls Jason a-hole.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. I've just gone to responding whenever I hear that anywhere near me, so works out for the best.
And it was at that point that Jason gave us this week's show title.
People scream, "Hey, you're the guy who ruined my monk." And I'm like, "Yeah, suck it."
Welcome to Nerd Burger, episode number 8. I'm Craig.
And I'm Mike.
And we're in the bizarro world. Because you asked me if I wanted to do the intro this week, and I was like, oh my goodness, what do I do? And here we are, episode 8.
Dieter was unavailable.
Who?
Dieter.
Dieter?
Yeah.
Who's Dieter? Is this a... Do we hire somebody?
He did the intro a couple of episodes ago.
Dieter.
Or possibly one episode ago.
I don't know. Okay.
I honestly don't know now.
I'm not sure who Dieter is.
Dieter. That guy. Oh, jeez.
I'm missing. Is this a nerdy reference? Should I be turning in my Nerd Burger membership card?
No, apparently in the universe that you exist in, we haven't recorded that episode yet.
Okay. I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Okay.
I wish I did know. But I don't. Can you explain? Help me out here a little bit.
Well, now I'm confused.
Okay. Well, don't worry about it too much. Let's not waste time on it.
All right.
We have another guest today. I decided to bring Jason on board the podcast, mostly for self-serving reasons. Nobody knows Mike. Nobody knows a lot of the other people I hang around with. Jason's actually known a little bit, so it's kind of name dropping. I mean, it's lame name dropping, which I guess is lame dropping, but I'll take it. Very exciting. He's coming to us from the wonderful world of Seattle. They see me mowing my front lawn. I know they're all thinking I'm so wide and nerdy. Just too wide and nerdy. He's a professional nerd.
How about that?
I do get paid.
Hello, Jason. Welcome to the show.
Hey there, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Doing great.
Do you like your theme song?
Because that's quality right
I chose
there.
It for you.
Yeah.
Other people got to choose
that's
theirs.
That's pretty fitting. I'm very pale and pasty, but that's...
I think we
that's
all
pretty,
are.
That's pretty par for the course up here in the rain and gloom of Seattle. Although today is actually incredibly sunny and warm. It's
that's because really we have your weather here.
Yeah, that's what I heard. The rest of the country has snow and rain and gloominess, and we have 80s and warm and
we had half a foot of rain yesterday.
Oh God, it just rained all freaking day.
I got the email from the USGS warning me that my yard was going to flood any moment. There's a USGS creek level.
USGS.
Creek level,
United States Geological Survey.
Yes, oh, right.
Because you've got Maggot Creek out here,
yeah,
back behind your house.
Well, Maggot Creek feeds into another creek, and that creek has a station that measures the creek level. And I found it on the interweb.
Is it a manned station? Is there a person?
Because I'm a total dork. A what?
Is it a manned station?
No.
Is there a person in a little shack?
I don't know. Maybe there is.
They're spending $60,000 a year just to have a guy sit in a shack with a stick.
He just sits there and watches where the concrete wall where they've painted the numbers.
Yeah.
And watches the water level rise. No, I had it. I figured out that I looked at the historical data and I saw that it never really went above 6 feet. And I guess 12 feet is flood stage or 10 feet is flood stage. But when it was, when it went up
fudge stage,
fudge stage,
fudge stage.
When it went up to 12 is when our yard flooded 4 years ago. So,
and you took videos of it.
I did. And of course I did because we're living in that age.
Right. Now where you can
take videos of everything.
Damn near everything.
Which we were discussing earlier before I hit the record button.
Wasted content.
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty much. So yeah, so I they have a feature. They said, hey, if you want to know when this thing gets above a certain level, set that level and tell us your email. So I said, okay, if it gets above 7 feet. And it sent me an email in the middle of the night last night.
Did you go running for a sign? Oh, my God.
Well, no, I didn't see it until this morning.
Craig, you need to find out where the station is and just get a pitcher of water and run out there and just dump it on it every once in a while. A
couple big 5-gallon jugs.
Yeah, just put some buckets around it and fill it up so that he thinks the floodwater's up to like 18 feet.
Right before he goes to bed.
That's right, yeah.
I go scrambling into the basement.
Yeah.
So, Jason, yes. What do you do for a living? Who are you, actually?
I am a what the fancy people call a professional nerd. I am a game designer. I write role-playing games and card games and board games when I can. But my main day job is writing a little game called Pathfinder, a role-playing game that has become rather popular as of late.
Well, that's awesome.
Now, yeah, it's not too bad.
I feel like I haven't accomplished anything. Thanks for the depression.
I had help.
Okay. That's true. I actually helped you a couple times.
You mean you don't do the whole thing yourself?
Well, with the core rulebook, it was almost entirely me. But, I mean, I have a lot of editors and graphic designers. And there were some folks in the office that helped me with development on some of the rules. But yeah, I mean, it was a solo job there for about the first year until I nearly completely came unhinged, and then they hired some people to help me. So these days I've got a staff of a grand total of 3. So it's me and Sean K. Reynolds and Stephen Randy McFarland, and we're the designers for the Pathfinder role-playing game.
Do you not have a fancy three-word name?
No, I don't. It's SKR, SRM, and JMB, I guess. I don't know. It's not special. It's not. No, it's... It's just, it is what it is.
Mike's shaking his head at me. Sean K. Reynolds is often referred to as SKR by people who know him.
Uh-huh.
And Stephen Radney McFarland is SRM, rather than writing out their whole name. It's the whole internet thing where you don't want to write out.
They both have long names.
Everybody else just calls Jason A-hole.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. I've just gone to responding whenever I hear that anywhere near me, so works out for the best. People scream, "Hey, you're the guy who ruined my monk." And I'm like, "Yeah, suck it."
I've seen him do it at conventions and people just walk away crying in tears. They're just crushed. And then they get in line at the Paizo booth and buy a whole bunch of stuff. They don't stay crushed long. The content's good. You know?
No.
They do a good job. Really. So mostly they don't stay crushed, at least not outwardly. Maybe they go back to their hotel rooms at the convention and curl up in the corner.
I can only hope.
Do you have another little something project?
Yeah, well, on the side, I do some side publishing. I've got my own imprint that I just launched about a month ago called Minotaur Games, which is funny. I had somebody get on my fan page on Facebook the other day and was like, "Minotaur, your last name's Bowman. I finally get it." And I'm like, yeah. So anyway, but yeah, Minotaur Games is just a thing that I'm doing. Little side PDFs. You can get them at all the big PDF spaces or spots, Paizo, Drive Through, all that kind of stuff. It's just me doing some extra rule stuff that doesn't really fit in our big giant core rule books. So it's all compatible with Pathfinder. So you know, it's keeping me busy, and they're doing pretty well. Mostly stuff to do with monsters right now. I'm doing a line called Monster Focus that's all about undead, zombies, skeletons, ghouls, things like that. So
I don't like zombies.
Yeah, that's what I hear, that you hate those. So I'm sorry that I wasted time on those.
Did you do that on purpose?
While he was drinking. I'd like to say that I try to time my jokes for when Mike's taking a sip of his root beer or whatever.
You can try to choke me. That's Coke Zero.
I'm sorry.
I'm caffeinating.
Coca-Cola, if you'd like to sponsor the content. Sponsor the podcast. I'm terrible at this. I don't know why we're still doing this.
Well, no, it's the same reason that I'm drinking the tasty Coke Zero, is because this is not the normal time that we do this.
That's true. We're kind of doing this late to
this accommodate. This is my nap time.
We're accommodating Jason, who's out in Seattle and apparently just got up for breakfast.
No, I had breakfast like 2 hours ago.
at 1:30.
Yeah.
Your time, yeah. Got up at 1, had breakfast, watched your cartoons.
It was a late Saturday night. What can I say?
Oh, but that's what it's like to be an American. So,
that's right.
And single?
No, I'm not single.
Oh, okay.
Me and my girl went out drinking last night.
So. Well, good for you.
Yeah,
she's an enabler. I've met her.
She is. She's totally an enabler. She helps me brew beer. She's evil that way.
We're going to come back to that. The beer, not so much.
The drinking?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right.
But, Mike, you had something, or maybe two things. Now he's looking around for his notes. We even had a pre-production meeting.
Is that what you call that?
Yeah.
Jason.
Yes.
You actually use Facebook.
I do.
A lot, I hear.
Quite a bit.
Do you talk to your fans?
Yes.
Through the Facebook?
Yeah.
That's very generous of you.
We are Facebook's newest nemesis. We have a bone to pick with them.
Yeah.
Oh, well. I actually find Facebook to be rather useful. I mean, these days it's a bit scattershot with how it works and how many people get to see my posts, but you know, I've got a fan page I manage, and I'm also the manager of the Pathfinder RPG by Paizo fan page, which has, you know, a mountain of people who read it. But it's useful. It's a little scattershot. I never am quite 100% sure how many people actually see the stuff I post up. I mean, it gives you metrics and information, but it seems kind of random.
Well, you seem to have a pretty good handle on your use, unlike some people.
Okay.
According to...
Where are you going with this?
I'm lost now. What's going on?
Okay, here's the headline of the article.
Ah.
Facebook causes psychotic episodes and delusions, claims study.
Awesome, more mental disorders.
Oh my God, yes.
Via social media.
This is an article from the Daily Mail. By Victoria Woolston. There are multiple O's and L's. It might be a typo, but that's what it says. Facebook and other social networking sites can actually send you mad, according to scientists in Israel. Researchers from Tel Aviv University have linked psychotic episodes in patients to internet addiction and delusions caused by virtual relationships cultivated on social networking sites.
Well, I don't, that seems totally unrealistic. I mean, you know, just because I have, you know, 2,500 people who actually love and adore me and hang on my every word and believe everything
no,
I
no,
say.
No, 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 we're not talking about them.
Throw themselves in front of a bullet for me. I mean, that.
We're talking about everyone else.
They'd throw themselves in front of a bullet for you?
Sure. Sure, we'll go with that.
I want that.
Yeah, no, it's nice. It's nice.
I have people for a lot of things. Often, I want people.
You want people to dive in front of bullets for you?
Absolutely.
So what you're saying is you want your own Charlie Runkle?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
Little bald guy that looks like a penis.
You want your own little bald guy that looks like a penis. Okay. Lead researcher, Dr. Uri Knudsen.
I have one of those already, right? Moving on.
Tel Aviv University's Sackler Faculty of Medicine and the Shalvada Mental Health Care Center said, as internet access becomes increasingly widespread, dosa related psychopathologies.
Go ahead.
That was bad.
Oh, really?
That was terrible.
I blame my Israeli accent on NCIS.
Yeah, fair enough.
Honestly, what I think happened was that Craig made me do the Dieter voice for him, and that threw me off. Yeah, I know. Craig can be that way sometimes.
So...
In each case, a connection was found between the gradual development and why is it Arnold Schwarzenegger all of a sudden? I can never do him when I'm trying.
And it's getting close to Indian, too. Why don't you just read it?
The gradual development and exacerbation of psychotic symptoms, including delusions, anxiety, confusion, and intensified use of computer communications.
Dr. Knudsen also said,
all of the patients developed psychotic symptoms related to the situation, including delusions regarding the person behind the screen and their connection through the computer. Two patients began to feel vulnerable as a result of sharing private information, and one even experienced tactile hallucinations, believing that the person beyond the screen was physically touching her.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So, using
is that whole poke feature? I always wondered what they did, but I've never felt like I'm being touched when I get poked. But now I guess I understand.
Poked.
Seriously, yeah, what is that? I don't get that. Every once in a while, some random person will be like, poke, and I'm like, what the hell?
They're picking a fight.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh.
Seriously. That's the internet equivalent of, what are you looking at?
Really? I always thought it was something dirty, so I've just avoided it.
Is it because dudes are poking you all the time? Mm-mm. No?
No.
All right. So, so let me get this straight. Social media can either, according to a previous episode, turn you into a slobbering,
I'm missing out on everything. My life is empty without constant exposure to everything that's going on.
Or, conversely, that can turn me into a raving lunatic.
It can turn, well, yeah, that can turn you into a raving lunatic or a mofo with FOMO.
Right.
Well, there was another study here, a study from the University of Gothenburg found that people with low income and low educated people spend the most time on Facebook. And within this group, those who spent the most time on the site were less happy and less content with their lives. It said 26% of them felt uneasy if they didn't log in regularly. That's basically the FOMO that we were talking about in a previous show.
So me posting a picture of my delicious breakfast is making other people feel bad because they can't make a delicious breakfast?
No, the fact that that it's out there, it makes them feel bad that they're not seeing it. So they have to log on.
Yeah, it's like if they don't go on,
it's kind of a form of OCD.
Fear of missing out is what it was called. Mm-hmm. It's because you feel, because you can know what Jason's breakfast is and you don't get on the Twitters and see what Jason's breakfast is, you are missing out.
Well, that is fair.
I was thinking that exact thing about 2 hours ago.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I hooked you up.
and apparently, Facebook wants you to miss out on real life. On real life, they don't want you to miss out on Facebook, but they want you to miss out on your real life. Have you seen the ads for the new Facebook Home, which we have previously skipped?
Yeah, we talked about that. Right.
The one with the woman who's walking through an art museum, and all she sees is the Facebook Home stuff that's like forcing itself on top of what's actually happening, and she doesn't actually see or experience any of the art. Or the sculpture, or the painting, or the people that she's with, she's constantly interrupted by Facebook, and they say that's a good thing.
Isn't that kind of counterintuitive to their ultimate goal, though, right? I mean, if you're not experiencing anything but Facebook, won't it eventually devolve into everyone just posting, hey, I just saw this thing on Facebook. Hey, I saw this thing on Facebook. Did you see? Because no one will have any experiences to post on Facebook other than seeing things on Facebook.
Okay, thank you, Jason. I was starting to feel sad from what Mike was saying, and you now made me feel happy.
Well, you should post that on Facebook.
Screw that.
Well, we'll post this episode on Facebook.
That's true. And somewhere out there, there'll be a person who won't be listening to this podcast, won't be learning about it on Facebook, and they'll feel like they're missing out.
That's right.
One can only hope.
Well, that's because they are missing out, clearly. I mean.
All right. That's enough Facebook crap.
What else is new?
What else is new? I watched Hemlock Grove on Netflix. Watched the whole series. Season, I guess, 13 episodes.
Wow.
It had werewolves in it.
Did they upload the entire season all at once?
Yeah, that's how Netflix is doing it.
Oh, that's cool.
When the thing comes out, it's boom. Big dump of episodes all at once.
Oh, great. Netflix just uploaded another series. There goes my weekend.
Yeah, pretty much. I managed to spread it out over 2 weekends.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't sit there and watch just for like 13 hours straight. It wasn't quite that bad.
By the end, you're in soiled clothes and covered in food wrappers.
And it's a horror movie, so I'm shivering and shaking.
Fair enough.
Or, you know, it's a 13-hour horror movie. And actually, it wasn't. It was gory occasionally, but not terribly often. It was more of a gothic story. It was all creepy mood and atmosphere and weird characters. It was interesting. I don't want to spoil anything because I do think that it's worth checking out, but there's werewolves and other monstery types, and there's a fortune teller type person and the modern day equivalent of the mad scientist and all of your gothic, horror novel tropes, but in a modern day setting.
Hmm. Yeah. I just started watching House of Cards also on Netflix, which is fantastic. I mean, Kevin Spacey is great and that really good.
Did anybody get disemboweled by a werewolf?
Well, Washington politics kind of seems like getting disemboweled by a werewolf.
Because that happened a few times.
Metaphorically, yes.
Oh, okay. Right. What have you been watching, Mike?
The wife and I watched all, coincidentally, 13 episodes.
Well, that's the magic number.
Yeah, of The Americans Speaking of Washington.
What station is that now?
That's on FX.
FX, okay.
So there's a whole buttload of gratuitous icky sex and man butt.
Oh, just like Archer. Also yeah. on FX.
and American Horror Story.
Yeah.
No, it was actually...
But that's the spy show.
That is the... It's set in 1981. Okay. And it's about a husband and wife, covert KGB team. They're not really husband and wife. They're posing. Sure,
they were set up to.
They were sent to America in the mid '60s and set up as husband and wife. And they have a business that they run. They're capitalists.
Oh, what kind of business? 1981. What kind of business?
You'll love this. Something that really probably shouldn't exist now, even if it still does. Okay. They're travel agents.
Oh, awesome. Because that's what you got to do when you set something. You got to take when you set something 30 years ago, 40 years ago. You got to make sure to include as many anachronisms as you possibly can, like anything that doesn't exist now anymore.
Yeah. Well, this show is full of them.
So, there's a whole lot of shots of like rotary phones.
Yep. Pretty much
rotary phones and $1.10 gas.
Oh, nice.
I haven't seen a sign at a gas station yet. That probably did happen though in the background.
It's probably sub a dollar at that point.
Yeah, oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
No, what's interesting is it's like, it's not a procedural in the sense that there's a long story arc that goes through the whole season, but there is the FBI is chasing after them. And so there's a lot of like cop drama stuff and, you know, they're trying to piece things together and figure out who these spies are and where they are. And so there's a little bit of kind of forensic stuff that happens,
but it's all analog forensics.
It's nothing like what we're used to seeing.
That's, you mean they're cool. Not checking the spy's Facebook page?
Well, it's like,
no. Or seeing if he's got Google Glass.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, look, he's walking around downtown Manhattan.
I can see exactly where he is. Wow.
Let's go get him. What a stupid spy.
Oh, he's looking at all of our confidential documents.
In like, this room. I know that room.
A lot
it's
of it
across
is
the hall.
Well, it's just the stuff that they can get away with because they don't have to worry about leaving DNA evidence.
Sure.
They don't have to worry about... I mean, really, they kind of wipe things down for fingerprints, and that's about it.
Right. Well, all the tropes that nowadays you think you have to, like, you question them. Like, well, why wouldn't, surely he left a hair in
right,
that room.
Right.
People who've watched CSI know, it's like, you watch something, and you're like, oh, well, the guy walked in with dirty shoes, and
that's all the stuff
that
we've
been,
that
they're going to be able to pinpoint to a particular quarry. That
all the stuff that we've been taught and conditioned by all these other TV shows to expect.
Right.
You just have to throw that completely out the
window. And if there's ever an emergency, they don't have a cell phone to call for help.
There's no cell phones. They don't have to worry about their GPS being tracked. They don't have to take the batteries out of their phones and destroy them when they're done using them. You know, they just get out of the car and get on a payphone, which are everywhere in the show. It's kind of awesome, and I can't imagine
that to film the show. They have to walk around. They have like trucks filled with like old payphone booths they just that they can set up because those things
set
don't
up
exist
everywhere.
Anywhere.
Oh, they're really they do a lot of outdoor scenes and all of the cars and all the extras and the clothing and everything. It's sure. Like there's nothing like they don't screw around.
But that's something you would see in like Freaks and Geeks, which is set during the '80s.
But
all the cars and the you know the decor in the
right,
homes,
right, right.
They can just build sets appropriately and get the right costumes. But for a show that you know we know, like nowadays, you watch anything having to do with any sort of law enforcement, it's going to be up the wazoo with cell phones and laptops and GPSs and you know high tech detection kits and forensics and everything else. And none of that's in there. So that alone almost makes it like that'd be interesting just to see like how did they do that kind of crap before everybody had their tricorder, you know, in their pocket to help them figure it out.
Well, what astounds me is I can't imagine being, you know, a 20-something or a teenager watching the show and just like,
having
like
no clue.
Their minds just must be blown by some of this stuff because I remember all of it.
Yeah.
It's nostalgic and kitschy for me, the fact that none of this stuff, exists at that time, but...
Are they including any like early 80s fad stuff? Like, is there a women with like neon tights and big hair and stuff
that? There's some of that stuff.
Is there really? Because early, I mean, 1981, that was.
Well, there's still. Disco is still.
I'm
going to
say people still looked an awful lot, awfully disco, and guys were still very hairy.
Huh?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of sideburns and long hair and chest hair and, you know,
big
necklaces
collars.
And big
giant,
collars.
Giant
and
neckties.
V-necks and.
Yeah, no, there's one. It's that transition period where disco was on the way out and all that new age MTV stuff is like about to start.
Well, there's a show on, what's it on? Nat Geo, I think, called The 80s, The Decade That Made Us. I've watched a couple episodes of that, and it's all talking about how the 80s transformed the United States. Mm-hmm. And so now you're right at the beginning of that. So it's almost like, you know, watch that show, The 80s, and you know, remind yourself of all the stuff and how that changed everything, and then go and watch The Americans and see all of that stuff in play, because you're going to see all these things happening where it's like, you know, 81 is Ronnie just took office. Well, and he wasn't quite the old doddering fool that we remember from the late. He's you know, he's about a year or two out from telling, basically rallying all of America to believe that the 50s was awesome and that we could be great again.
Right.
And
morning in America or whatever. Yeah, the show starts, I think, God, I want to say it's like the fourth episode. I might have that wrong. It might be the third, might be the fifth, but that's during that episode is when he gets shot.
Sure.
So it's that far back. I mean, it's literally, it's right after he takes office.
Yeah, because it's a very different time.
But it's strange.
Well, yeah, I mean, Alf hasn't even come on yet.
No. And what else is interesting about the show is it's really apolitical. They don't really get into, I mean, there are, like, Casper Weinberger is a character. You don't actually see him. You see his wife. You see his maid. Okay,
sure.
They spoiler alert, they bug his house. So
is Casper still alive?
I don't know.
Is he watching the show going,
hey,
the hell?
But yeah,
Maude,
no, you know,
did so they do this?
You know,
well, that's because they didn't have Facebook and people wanted to know what he was having for dinner. If I could bring it back full circle.
Hey, oh, I don't have my sound effects.
Yeah, well, yeah. So you watched the whole thing, you liked it?
Yeah,
it thumbs was up.
The it started off a little slow, as they always do.
Sure, because they're setting everything up.
I mean, the first episode was really raw. I mean, it starts off very, very intense. There's a chase scene that goes on for a really long time, and it's very suspenseful. And then, kind of the first couple episodes, you're learning. You're being introduced to the characters. You're learning this world again, or for the first time, if you're, you know, a teenager. You're just kind of getting your bearings with it and seeing where are they going to take this? Where are they going to go with these characters? The second half of the season, though, is just like, I mean, we couldn't stop watching it.
Wow.
Yeah, it was
must see TV.
It was like all weekend long, every night during the week. And then when did we finish it? I think we finished it during this past week. The season finale was on, but,
and now you have to wait.
Now we have to wait till next January. Yeah, so that's awesome.
And if you want to watch it like you just watched it, you have to wait till next April or May.
Right.
You have to wait 11 and a half months to be able to just sit down and marathon it all.
I had a coworker told me about it, and I started DVRing it. And it had already been on, but luckily I caught, they had a like a mid-season marathon, like mm-hmm. the first six episodes. And so I recorded all of those, boom, right in one shot, and then picked it up from there. And we had probably 9 episodes on the DVR before we actually started watching it.
I find it humorous that you're talking about DVRing an episode of a show that takes place in a period of time where if you missed it when it originally aired, you were just screwed. Yeah. That was it. You didn't never get to see it.
Ever.
Maybe
if it went into syndication like 6 years later, you might get to watch it.
If you had that cable channel.
Yeah.
If exactly. your parents got cable in 1985.
Yeah, and you had a Betamax. Yeah,
and you could exactly. record it and watch it again and again.
And if you could figure out how to program it.
I mean, unless you got early HBO, then you got to watch the same like 7 shows over and over again. Forever. Yeah.
There's like 30 movies that they just play constantly.
Yeah, Beastmaster. I saw Beastmaster like 100 times.
Well, but yeah, to wrap that up, the last episode, it was so, and I'm a very relaxed TV movie watcher. I try to turn my brain off. I like to be, mm-hmm. I like to absorb and be entertained. I don't like to think about it. Man, I was so worried for what was happening. I was like, I just want to fast forward all the way to the end just to see what happens. I can't take it. I can't take it anymore.
Wow.
Yeah, it was that good.
It's getting windy. It's going to rain here.
Is that thunder?
Stupid Atlanta weather. Something's rumbling and shaking.
Well, if you get any emails about the flood stage, let me know.
Oh, hold on. I got to run out.
Actually,
with my 5 gallons of water.
This morning, thanks to one of the local meteorologists here, I discovered an app that tells me all that information now. So I don't need to check the website anymore.
So, Jason,
Yes.
I'm going to check it right now.
Okay, you do that. I'll talk to Jason. That's nice. See, we got a podcast here. See that microphone in front of you? Yeah. That's a podcast. We spent like $11.
Don't worry, he's got an app for it.
We spent $11 on that microphone.
Ooh.
Good. You just got
now it's worth $10.
No, it was worth $6 the day we brought it home.
Oh, well, all right. $5.50 then.
You like beer, as stated earlier.
I like beer.
You like beer so much that you decided that you're not going to leave it in the hands of the idiots out there to make beer. You're going to make your own.
That's true.
Those idiots from your homeland.
That's right. Yeah. Those fools. Yeah. No, I started brewing beer, I don't know, probably about a year ago now, actually. Been brewing a batch now and again. Maybe going to do another one next weekend, I'm thinking. But yeah, it's a fun little hobby. And at the end, you get to get drunk.
You get to get really drunk if you do it right.
Because
you can determine how much alcohol ends up in your beer.
Yeah, that's part of the art and the science of beer brewing, actually. It's all just a matter of, you know, how much sugars you put in for the little yeast monsters to eat.
There's yeast monsters?
Yes, they are. I've determined that.
Do they disembowel anyone?
The process of brewing is really, really quite simple. You basically are steeping and boiling grains to get their sugars out. And then you cool that down and you put in hops depending on what flavor you want and things like that. And then you cool it down to room temperature and you throw in like 5 billion tiny little yeast monsters. And the tiny little yeast monsters...
Trademark.
Yeah, that's right. Eat the sugars and... they basically fart and belch, and that either gives you CO2 or alcohol, and that's what you get out of them. And that's basically how you make beer, little tiny yeast monsters.
I wish I could fart alcohol.
Yeah, no, you can. You just need to consume enough.
You'd be ruining that really nice sofa.
Yeah,
no, just drilling bad. Cans of alcohol into it all night long.
Yeah,
it's leather. It cleans up.
No, that doesn't come clean.
So have you blown a batch yet? Have you gotten done with one and been like, oh, what did I do to this thing?
It helps that my partner in crime, my girlfriend is a chemist.
Ooh, so, geez, nice. Oh,
it actually helps quite a bit because she knows how to clean and sanitize things properly. So, as it turns out, when you start to brew your own beer, you quickly come to realize that all of the mystique and all of the wonder about it all basically comes down to spending a great deal of time scrubbing everything.
Yes, everything needs to be ridiculously clean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you leave anything in there, it could grow. Because basically, I mean, once you pitch in the yeast, you take this giant 5-gallon bucket of beer, seal it up, and let it sit at room temperature for like a month. And
so it's all got to be clean.
If anything else is in there, you lose.
See, I learned that watching Walter White on Breaking Bad.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Because he cleans the crap out of stuff.
Yeah.
So, your girl's a chemist, eh? Yeah.
Does she know how to make a little
crystal? We're not making crystal any meth.
See, that's exactly happening. What a meth cook would say if he was asked.
That is exactly.
just saying.
Yeah. So
is it blue?
So to convince you I'm not making meth, I have to tell you I am making meth? Wait, how does this work?
Yeah, don't make sure you don't say, you know, yes, say that you're making meth, and then we'll post this on the internet forever.
Oh, great.
And we haven't actually said your last name on the podcast, but I'm sure they won't have a hard time figuring out who you are from all the other information you gave. Bit,
I used to be a game designer. Now I'm a felon.
Well, you can be both.
It's true.
I mean, you got a bunch of felons working over there at Paizo, right?
Whoa.
No,
I'm kidding, guys. I'm kidding.
But it's funny because there are a lot of incarcerated people who like to play role-playing games quite a bit.
Got nothing better to do. They like to
send us letters about how they ruin their characters.
Ooh. Their monk?
I'm guessing how they ruined their monk. I'm guessing they don't go to sleep in a ball.
Yeah.
And they go to sleep dreaming
out
of...
on parole.
Have you received letters, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Have they been mostly nice letters, or have you received some really, like, woo?
Yeah, we've received a few that we've then had to do a Google search to see how much trouble we were in.
But
so far, it's all turned out just fine.
last words.
One inmate sent us
a severed head.
A pair of his prison-made dice.
Oh.
Made out of which soap are or made using toilet paper and, I believe, spit.
Oh, sure. They make shivs out of that, too.
Yeah, yeah. You know, whatever you need.
It's a thick, solid version of paper mache.
Yeah, basically. You know, in this case, for dice, because they won't let them have normal dice because, you know, people will use it for gambling.
Can you sharpen paper mache?
Understanding is that you can kill the hell out of somebody with a paper mache shiv. It happens plenty.
I find that astounding.
And
well,
then
go out, back cook, when I was cook doing some math,
Dragon and Dungeon,
and you can see it up close and personal. Go ahead. Sorry.
No worries.
I'm just encouraging my podcast partner here to go and commit a crime.
Can I borrow your girlfriend, Jason?
What was that?
Jeez. Oh, in context, that's terrible.
For the meth cooking.
In context, it's still terrible. Oh. I apologize, Jason, and Jason's girlfriend. I know your name, but we're not going to say it.
I generally leave her out of my direct conversations, mainly because I don't want her getting mail from prisons.
That's a good idea. Do I know any other chemists?
I don't know.
Oh, I do.
Okay. Well, go get your meth habit taken care of. Come back here and, you know, dig up your backyard for 4 days, and then we'll do another podcast. That's what meth heads do, right? They can't stop doing things.
That guy was digging up his front yard.
Well, no, but I mean, on the show.
You'll get a lot done on the podcast.
Craig, you'll never guess what I did. You'll never guess what I did. I recorded 47 episodes yesterday.
but I wasn't here.
He just cut in your voice from various other podcasts.
I did your part.
You didn't? Really?
Yeah. Hi, this is Craig.
Was I funny?
You were hilarious.
Okay, cool. So we'll just go ahead and put those up tomorrow. One of them will be the regular episode, and there'll be 46 bonus episodes. Did you get them all edited overnight?
No. All the scabs that I picked off my face clogged up the keyboard, and I couldn't.
So what you're saying is I'm going to have to edit.
Sorry.
That sucks.
Well, and the quality started going down.
And you're a meth head now, so that sucks too. the quality started going down
as his teeth started falling out.
Jesus. Oh. Welcome to my burger.
Well.
So that's another druggy character that you've developed. Meth head Mike. To go along with Jeff, the stoned delivery guy.
Hey, Jason. Would you like some sandwiches? Is that him?
Yeah.
I hadn't practiced it since then. Anyway.
Well done. You'll earn another potty award for...
Bling! Craig and Mike? Now, I've never met them before. They just called and ordered some sandwiches one day, and I delivered them. I don't understand the question.
So that was a big fat pause. Michael will have to edit that out.
No,
yeah, he'll take care of that. Now that we've said that, of course, it's going to stay in.
Maybe.
So I discovered, a few days ago that up on the D&D website for the Dungeon Magazine website, my next adventure is going to be up Dark Lantern. It's going to come out in May.
Oh, good deal.
That's right. For those of you out there who aren't, for those of our listeners who aren't already friends of mine and know all of this stuff.
Don't worry, you'll get some soon.
I freelance, write a bit, mostly for D&D, a little bit for Paizo, potentially some other things in the works. And so I've been doing that for a few years. So this is just kind of giving a heads up because I'm sure I'll probably babble a little bit about it when Dark Lantern comes up. And down the road with other things too. Jason, you're a lead designer nowadays. You started doing what?
Well, I actually started doing freelance for the RPGA way back in the day, back when I was still in Milwaukee.
when we were both there.
Yeah.
Back when we were friends before we became long-distance friends.
That's right, yes.
Was that the Menominee pronunciation or the Potawatomi?
Milwaukee.
I was always told it was Algonquin for Land of Three Stinky Rivers. but I think that was just a joke.
three stinky anyway. Rivers and a sewage filled lake,
something like yeah. that. Well, that came later after hey, the white man
at least
showed
it's
up.
Never caught on fire.
That's true.
Yet,
suck yep. it, Cleveland.
It's only a matter of time.
And some river in New York too. Was it yeah. the Hudson caught on fire or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. Isn't it permanently on fire? Oh no, that's like New Jersey.
That's the Springfield Tire Fire. Yeah, that's always burning.
Yeah. but yeah, no, way back in the day, I used to do freelance work, and I got in with Living Greyhawk, and from there, I went on and got a job with Paizo as the managing editor of Dragon Magazine back when it was still with us at Paizo. So yeah, I've got a lot of experience doing all of that freelance and stuff on both sides of the table.
And you're responsible for me being a freelancer. Did you know that?
Oh my God, I'm so sorry, everyone.
Thanks a lot. I like doing it and I make money. It's fun. That's,
you can't like earn enough to get like Nachos Bel Grande.
Jesus. Well, I make a little bit.
I figured it was appropriate.
I make a little bit more than that.
Okay, fine. You can also get an extra chalupa.
Jeez. Yes, that's what I got paid for Darkland. I didn't even get money. They're just going to send me a Nachos Bel Grande and a chalupa.
That's
for a like 17 or 18,000 word adventure.
Yeah, coming all the way from Seattle, that's going to be a little soggy by the time you get it. Don't worry, it'll be fun.
That's okay. I'll just microwave it.
No, it'll be fine. It'll work out just great. I just threw up a little in my mouth.
Stuff is barely edible.
And it tastes better
fresh.
Than the Taco Bell from that yeah, just no, traveled 3,000 miles.
Taco Bell, if you'd like to sponsor the podcast.
Yeah.
Not gonna happen. We just talked about how we were throwing up at the thought of your food.
I still like it. I still eat it. What's wrong with me?
I have Taco Bell on occasion. I know Jason had a bad experience once.
Oh, no.
Yeah, there may have been an incident.
Tell us about it.
It's no.
It's gaming related. Wasn't it at a convention?
Well, it was at a convention. That's true. I had a bean burrito that tasted suspiciously soapy. And then I had that bean burrito again. I called it the burrito el sopo. And yeah, I had that burrito more than once. Let's just put it like that.
Burrito el sopo repito.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. The thing I do love about Taco Bell, though, is that you know what you're getting, right? It's like they only have 12 ingredients, and it's just a matter of how they pile them up on top of something.
Yeah, true. Very yeah, true.
It's nice.
Comforting.
Yeah, no. You're never surprised.
Now, is soap one of those 12 ingredients?
It's the 13th ingredient.
There's
that number again.
Which I believe is salmonella.
Allegedly.
Yeah, whatever allegedly. It was. I don't know.
You had one way or the other, you had a bad time.
Yeah, no, that you could say that. Yeah.
I know that put you off of Taco Bell for a long time. Are you still off of Taco Bell?
No, it's eased over time, but it did take like 4 or 5 years.
I had an experience with McDonald's that put me off of them for like a good decade.
Until the McRib came out again.
Until the McRib came back in pretty much. And no, you're not far off.
They said I was making a your joke. Eyes dilated and you were like, oh.
Yeah, like Homer.
No, for like 10 years, the only thing that I would ever eat at McDonald's were milkshakes and fries.
Well,
I would avoid anything with
a bunch of
quote unquote
pureed pork meat pressed yeah. into the big mm-hmm. shape of ribs.
Yeah, we've covered that on this show, I think.
Might have been during some of the pre stuff.
I think it was the yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a pleasant process. That thing.
No.
In fact, I had to stop eating the McRib after I read that article.
Yeah, don't. Yeah,
it involves bleach.
Yeah, well, be surprised how much that does involve bleach.
Yeah, but I don't want to know about it. Like, I want to be able to enjoy my crappy processed food.
It's one of the things I realized recently, that if society's food chain were to collapse for some reason, you know, be it zombies, aliens, you know, whatever, North Korea.
Sentient elephants with monkeys and with guns. And
yeah, sure, whatever. Right. I would end up having to become probably a vegetarian, because I don't look at a cow and get hungry.
No.
Right. I mean, who does that?
you drive by a fast food place and go,
Yeah, exactly. I think about the end product, but when I see the animal from which it came, I don't get hungry. Right. It's not like I do not equate cow with food.
You don't look at the cow and get other feelings, do you?
Oh, listen, I'm from Wisconsin.
So yes,
those are just rumors.
We're all from Wisconsin originally. Like,
so is that what cow tipping means?
No, that's not. Craig asked me to come on the show a few weeks ago, and he promised me that we wouldn't talk about what happened with cows back in Milwaukee, but it appears that he's broken that promise.
Have you ever been cow tipping?
No, I haven't. No. I grew up in the city.
I grew up in like the small town, rural,
in the woods, northeastern Wisconsin, from which they make paper.
Yes, and I never went cow tipping either. But then again, I was like, well, I was much like I am now. I was a nerd in high school. It's not like I went running around with all the jock. Woo, we're gonna go tip cow.
No, you'd have to talk to Chris Voss for that. He went cow tipping.
Chris Voss, the lead singer of the record company who provides the music for the beginning and end of this show.
Oh, really? I did not know that. That's awesome.
Yep.
Cool.
Obviously a huge fan since you recognized it and everything.
That was actually a running joke back when we were living in Milwaukee. Me and Jason we never once went to see his band play.
because he would think we respected him.
Yes.
He
thanked us for it, because whenever he hung around, he would watch Packer games with us all the time. And every so often there'd be something else, but usually it was Packer games. And he commented a number of times. He's like, I love hanging around with you guys because you're not the people that are hanging around with the band. Because he had kind of a little bit of a following in the town, and there was a lot of people that kind of, you know,
you get
treated him a little too good and, you know, tried to get favors from him and all this kind of crap. And when he hung around with us, we gave him crap just like we gave each other. And he found it a nice, grounding experience. Yeah. But now he's living in L.A. So.
Yeah, and the last time he was here in Seattle, I finally actually saw him perform.
Oh, well, no, I still haven't seen him before. But yeah,
by the time it was done and over with, though, he came over and I was like, yeah, that was okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
Chris is something.
But anyway, I know he's been cow tipping, so you could ask him. I guess the trick is, the thing they don't tell you is that the cows are not permanently knocked over. They get back up and they're angry.
So are we being nerd-burgered on cow tipping?
Apparently. Yeah. Cow tipping 101.
Make sure they're all the way tipped.
Yeah. Double tip.
Well, don't just half tip them.
Double tip.
Yeah.
Have you seen Zombieland? The double tip rule?
Step one, double tip. Yeah.
No, knock them over once and then make sure they stay knocked over.
Yeah. No, preferably bring a rock with you and put the rock on them so they have a harder time getting up.
There might be an episode title in there somewhere. Put a rock on them. So before you go cow tipping, you have to go to a quarry.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could. It doesn't have to be a quarried rock. It could be any rock. It's just a matter of weight. You don't need something, you know.
So a nice rounded river rock will work well.
So it's just weight. I could just put my little brother on it.
Yeah, no, that would work just fine. Until it got up and killed him.
Who listens to the podcast, by the way?
Yeah, Kurt.
Oh. Yeah, Kurt's going to have a nice little, like, hey. Yeah.
The next time Craig asks you to come cow tipping with him.
Well, anytime I ask him to go out into the country somewhere, take a drive.
Going to go for a ride?
You should be worried about that anyway.
Craig, are you going to put me on a cow? he's nearly as big as me, though. So I even though he's 8 years younger, when I was, you know, like a high schooler, I could have taken him along. Just...
Picked him up
and put him on top of a tipped over cow, but I don't think I could do that now. He'd fight. He's scrappy.
Indeed. So weren't we originally talking about freelancing?
I think that's where we started. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, let's see. Cow tipping.
Don't
eating a cow. fast food apocalypse, Taco Bell.
Having to do with gaming.
Yeah, okay, we're Taco Bell back. Experience yeah, at a convention because you were there for freelancing.
You got to roll back the tape. There we go. Yeah, we reconstructed it all. That's top-notch podcasting right there, just recounting what we just did. That's like those stupid reality shows things.
People love that.
Jeez. Oh, you know what we have to do now when we're done recording this?
What?
We need to each record like a little confessional interview that we can splice in right here.
Okay, so you need to take this piece out.
Yes.
Where we're talking about that.
Maybe.
So they asked me to come on this show, maybe, and talk to them about various burgers and nerds, but I don't really know what those are, so I guess I'm just going to talk about something about cows. I don't really know. I don't have very many friends.
So now I'm lost again. I don't.
Yeah, we were. No.
Freelancing.
I was just talking a little bit about freelancing because I've got stuff coming up, and I wanted to just kind of put it on the podcast waves that I do that kind of thing.
It's a tricky field to get into, especially in the game writing. There's so many people who want to do it.
Yeah, I got lucky. But I've looked back at some of the stuff I wrote early on. That first adventure I wrote for Living Greyhawk for you. Oh, good Lord. That's terribly written. It's an interesting adventure, but it's horribly written.
Should you not have gotten paid in Taco Bell for that one?
I got paid $50 for that one.
You could eat at Taco Bell for a month on that.
That was a 4-hour convention adventure, and I got paid $50 in $19.90.
Ching. That's like $62,013.
Yeah.
Actually, it's probably like $42,013.
Well, that's. Yeah,
I knew I should have invested it in tacos.
But Living Greyhawk, Living Greyhawk, invested it in PepsiCo.
They're awfully soggy, but they're worth $50, $90.
Okay. Yeah, it is tough to get in though. I mean, I got lucky. Basically, yeah. I knew you. You got doing the RPGA thing. You guys needed another module written.
Oh yeah,
and you said, "Hey, Craig, you come up with interesting ideas. Do you think you can write them down?" And I said, Oh, sure. I can do that for $50. I would have done it for free. I would have. I mean, just it would have been cool.
Good luck getting that cool right thing. Now, huh?
Oh, I don't write stuff for $50 now. I get paid now.
Yeah.
And it kind of just went from there. I did a little bit of something for Dragon Magazine when you were editor there as well. And then I got to know Chris Tulak and that blew up. You know, I wrote a few things for the RPG for him. And then the best thing that ever happened to me was getting laid off from my job like 4 years ago.
Your day job.
My day job at the time. And I said, hey, look, I got all this free time. So I sent my resumes out to get a new day job. And then I started talking to people about saying, hey, I got a ton of free time. You want me to write something for you? And it just kind of snowballed from there. And my name got passed along to different people. And
Oftentimes it's just a matter of persistence, right? I mean, especially in the RPG industry, because it's like you'll get, I mean, I got turned down a bunch of times before I ever got anything published. And, you know, it's just a matter of refining. And eventually you'll get in. But, I mean,
you get better and better and better at what you're doing. And I've been told by two different people in the RPG design industry, two different people said to me, good work begets more work.
Yeah.
So you just get better and better and better at things. And eventually you get to the point where you're getting assignments and you're not having to pitch things constantly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, that's basically what I have happened, right? You know, I got to the point where I was getting assignments and then I took the initiative and put together a lot of the rules for the start of Pathfinder. And when it came time for us to make a decision to either go with fourth edition or do our own thing, I pitched, hey, I've got all these rules and I've got a system that's half written. And they were like, awesome, do that. And it was just kind of, oh, okay. So I guess I'll just go and write 500,000 words now. I'll talk to you guys later.
500,000 words, yikes.
Yeah, well, the core rule book is probably about 350. I didn't write all of it, but I did at least manage and edit all of it.
I just looked at my resume the other day when I saw that Dark Lantern was getting added. And I have a total of just shy of 200,000 words written.
Oh, I haven't done that math, but I'm going to wait for I'm up over 2 million would be my guess.
I'm sure. I'm working in small enough doses that I can actually track that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm at the point where I don't.
But I find it interesting to, you know, I find it interesting that, like, you know, 200,000 words, that's a long novel.
Well, that's a very long novel.
You know, 100,000 words
is... Most of your paperback novels clock in at about 50.
Well, I've been led to believe that until you hit about 50, people will even mostly call it a novella.
Yeah, that's true. No,
like, you know, an inch and a half thick trade paperback is going to be about 100,000 words.
Well, it depends on the font.
Yeah, I mean, roughly speaking. So, you know, a reasonable novel. So a long novel, you know, like Stephen King from the middle of his career. From the middle of the career, and I'm not talking about now. Actually, now he's gotten shorter again. For a while there, he was, you know, it was not until like probably 400,000 word novels.
Ugh.
But it was interesting because I was like, hey, look at that, 200,000 words, just shy. One more thing goes live, and that'll be exactly 30 published pieces and 200,000 words.
Cool.
So it's kind of the milestone thing. Now I just have to wait. And I've got stuff in the pipe. I just have to wait for it to come out. And I have no control over when that happens.
Yeah, my next big book coming out is Mythic here in August. That thing is monstrous. We just finished it and sent it off to the printer. So that is good.
Well, congratulations.
Oh, thank you. And to you too,
sir. All of your wonderful success. And Mike, we're sorry, but you're not a designer, so you don't get
it. Congratulations on Floodwater.
Thank you.
Well, looks like we're getting close to a wrap-up time here. Jason, we'd like to thank you for coming on board.
Yes, thank you very much.
Taking some time out of your busy morning.
It's afternoon now. It's fine. It's fine. I'm done with breakfast. I'm contemplating lunch.
Okay. Awesome.
I think we're going to wrap her up. Mike, what do you got to say about where you can find the show?
You can find us on our website, nerdburgershow.com, at nerdburgershow on the Twitters. And Facebook.
Yeah. Even though we've
if been our account is still active which might not be anymore. We have no control over that. Nerdburger show. Do we want to find Jason anywhere?
Yeah, Jason, pimp yourself. Where can we find you?
You can find me on Facebook by going to facebook.com/Jason Bullman, BULMAHN.
And you can find posts by him all over the Paizo website. So if you just go digging around,
you can't swing
a dead cyber cat in there without hitting a Jason post.
Yeah, if you can put the H in the right spot, you can find me.
which I did not when I wrote down your name on my notes started.
I told them before the show that.
and I asked. I said, I wonder how many people do that.
I said, all the time.
The first time M-A-H-N. I ever appeared in print, the H was in the wrong spot.
Alrighty. On the next episode of Nerd Burger, Mike and Craig go cow tipping. And we're even going to fly Jason out here so we can put him on top of the cow to keep it down. Won't that be exciting?
Alright.
Alright, that's it for Nerd Burger this week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. What are you doing?
Just nothing. I'm getting
I'm playing with buttons.